generally, when people ask, what is your strategy to develop leaders, they jump right to the training programs. What's the training program you're going to use? And you got to back up and go, hey, we need to look at the kinds of experiences we're providing to prepare them for leadership, make sure they're getting the right mentoring and coaching.
Success isn't just about what you achieve. It's about living a life that reflects your values and priorities. Welcome to Engineer Your Success, the podcast that helps you lead with intention and live fulfilled.
Hey, this is Dr. James Bryant. Welcome to the Engineer Your Success podcast. I am your host and guide to designing a life where you are winning at work and at home. Today, we have a Mr. Brady Pyle.
Hi, James. Really excited to join you. My journey started when I was at Texas A&M University. I was trying to figure out what I wanted to do after I graduated. I knew I wanted a career in government service. So I pursued an opportunity through the co-op program. I interviewed with the CIA. The CIA said, hey, what are you interested in studying? What country are you interested in? And I really, through that conversation, knew that international wasn't really the focus for me. So I also interviewed for the Department of Health and Human Services, and they had a regional personnel office in Dallas. That was my first exposure to HR. And had a good opportunity there. Ultimately went to their Washington, D.C. office, learned HR policy work wasn't my area of interest. I enjoyed supporting customers locally. So I went to grad school at A&M in human resources and did a study of federal HR offices in Texas. NASA had a generalist concept, internal management consultants. And I asked, hey, how can I join this organization? They said, we're not hiring right now. I don't really have an opening. And a few weeks later, they called back and said, hey, if you would do a co-op opportunity. Ended up doing a co-op assignment with NASA and stayed nearly 30 years. I took early retirement from the federal government in February of 23. I stepped over into the nonprofit that's across the street from the Johnson Space Center. I'm at Space Center Houston now as the chief HR and inclusion officer. I support our team and 1.3 million guests each year at Space Center Houston. Been in HR for about 30 years. A lot of that supporting engineers and scientists at NASA. And so I have a love for fellow engineers.
What's the one thing that recently reminded you why you love the work that you do?
I love building leaders and growing leadership capacity. We participated in a leadership team developmental program called Pathways to Leadership. We had 25 of our leaders building cross-departmental bonds and relationships. And just at the end, we were all able to reflect on the experience together, where we're headed at Space Center Houston. We have an aggressive facility master plan to expand and host about 2 million guests a year. It's an exciting time to be at Space Center Houston. And that experience reminded me why I love what I do. When you see leaders kind of growing their capacities, working together to achieve big things.
What were some of the challenges that you faced when making the transition from NASA over to Space Center Houston?
When I left NASA, I was the Deputy Chief Human Capital Officer. Human capital at NASA has 400 employees supporting an 18,000 person workforce. When I came to Space Center Houston, we have 200 full-time employees, another 250 part-time and seasonal, a staff of 6 HR professionals. So the scope and role is different. I became more of a player coach. At NASA, I was more in the coach role with the executives overseeing things. Here, I needed to step in, get my hands dirty again, and work with the team. So it's been a very different role to move from NASA, where we were actually trying to minimize costs, and we cut HR spend by 25% over 5 years, to stepping into Space Center Houston, where we're growing at 10% per year. So very different to give your creative energies to growth versus when you're trying to cut back.
A lot of what you've talked about centers around this concept of growing leaders. So let's talk about intentionally growing leaders.
Yeah, that's a great question. When I first started at Space Center Houston, they didn't have much in the way of leadership training or development. My predecessor in HR crafted this position to say, we need more focus on developing leaders and employee engagement. So my work at NASA worked on both areas. I'm a huge proponent of the Center for Creative Leadership. They have the 70-20-10 model. So they said 70% of leadership development should be about on-the-job experience and getting the right experience, having the right level of progression, you know, in your leadership journey. 20% is about contacts. So mentoring and coaching is a huge part of that. 10% is about the content. So actual leadership training and classes. That was a huge framework for me when I worked at NASA and then also here at Space Center Houston. Generally, when people ask, what is your strategy to develop leaders? They jump right to the training programs. What's the training program you're going to use? And you got to back up and go, hey, we need to look at the kinds of experiences we're providing to prepare them for leadership, make sure they're getting the right mentoring and coaching.
Let me ask you a question. What if you had a coach in your corner every week, helping you focus on what matters most, become a more effective communicator, and to lead well? That's the ideal behind Engineer Your Success Insiders, my private podcast for leaders who want practical tools, not just theory. Every week, in just 3 to 5 minutes, you'll get one story, one insight, and one action that you can use right away. The goal is to prepare you for those critical moments that matter at work and at home. If you're ready to take the next leap in your leadership, click the link in the show notes and join Engineer Your Success Insiders today. This is Dr. James Bryant, your coach in your corner. Okay. So what sparked your interest in leadership development?
I think I've always been interested in leadership and in people leadership. And probably 20 years ago or so, I went through a process of crafting my own personal mission statement. My personal mission is to improve leadership wherever I go. And so that applies to me both from a work context and also other areas that I volunteer with in the community or in my church. But the working through that process of developing that personal mission made it easier to focus in and say no to opportunities that didn't align with that.
Was there a particular negative or positive experience that you had throughout your career or life that made you want that leadership development focus?
Yeah, looking back over the course of my career, you know, I talked about the 70-20-10 model. My leaders and sponsors, people who've helped me grow in my career, definitely did the right things according to that model. So I started as a team lead, then I became a frontline leader, had that opportunity to lead in the area of my technical discipline for a while, and then moved over to another functional area and managed that. Then I went off to headquarters. I got a different view and a different experience, came back into a different function. Then I became a leader of leaders. And so my own journey has been one of progressively more responsible roles filled with mentors and coaches, and then sprinkling in the right leadership classes at the right time. And a lot of those leadership classes, you also get 360-degree feedback, which has always been very valuable to me at NASA. And then now at Space Center Houston, we regularly, annually provide kind of upward feedback, where leaders can identify, hey, what's one or two things to focus on improving? And I would say, as a leader of the last 20 years, I've always identified there's always different things you can work on to be better as a leader.
Yeah, so you've mentioned a couple of different terms that I would love to spend some time unpacking and talking about the differences between them. And that you mentioned leaders, mentors, coaches, and sponsors.
Yes. I think leadership is influence. Leaders are influencers. And sometimes your strongest influencers are folks on the front lines who have the right connections, have the right ideas, and can really influence an organization, can influence the culture as well. There are also people in leadership roles, and a lot of my HR focus is focused on making sure that people in leadership positions are acting as leaders and are improving as leaders as well. A mentor is someone a bit farther along and can provide advice and guidance. I've had several in my career. A pivotal moment was 2004, working hard in NASA to hire the right engineers to get shuttle to return to flight after the Columbia accident. And I had kids at home too at the time. I would come in to work my day, go back home, have dinner with the family, put the kids down and go back in and try to get ahead on the hiring side. I had a mentor. He said, when you're a father of young children, you're focused heavily on that role, your role as a father. Make sure you're nurturing your marriage relationship as well along the way. And so it was a pivotal piece of advice that ended up talking to my wife about. We made some adjustments, figured out how to manage the workload without making that sacrifice. It's pivotal to have mentors who are kind of further along the path and can give you that advice and perspective. Coaches are people who, when I think about a coach, it's someone who has kind of professional credentials or certification and use questions to guide you to a new realization. So a lot of times you can have coaches and mentors that kind of blend, or a coach that takes on a consulting role if they've got a particular experience. But pure coaching is asking questions and bringing up that realization of the individual. A sponsor is someone who is critical for career growth because they're the people that are helping you, champion you when you're not in a room, or making sure that they're giving voice to supporting your career in those forums that matter. And so everyone needs a sponsor. I've heard, just incidentally, I really like the definition of merit that's given by Roosevelt Thomas. He has an old book called Beyond Race and Gender. And he talks about in his book that merit has three dimensions. The task dimension that we normally think of when we think of merit, the cultural merit, that's knowing how to get things done in an organization, and then there's political merit, having sponsorship from someone whose voice will be heard. And he talks about in his book that insiders usually are able to get all three. Outsiders have a harder time getting that cultural and political merit if organizations are not intentional about it. And so that's always struck a chord with me and how we talk about merit, how we talk about sponsorship in an organization.
No, I appreciate that. One of the things that kind of struck a chord with me when you were talking about your mentor and the advice that when your kids are young, it's really important for you to nurture those relationships because you won't get that time back.
Yeah.
And the smart thing you did is talk to your wife about what you were thinking about doing. Because many times what we'll do, we'll make a decision and we'll start making changes, but we haven't communicated the why or what we're trying to accomplish with our significant other. And then if you hit a bump in the road, you're thinking, they don't understand. Don't they know all of the things that I'm changing and the sacrifices that I'm making? But we've never actually communicated those things to them. And one thing I tell my clients is you will not get credit for things you're doing that you haven't communicated.
Yeah. Well, and I think you're giving me too much credit because I did exactly that in the beginning until the mentor kind of brought the 2x4 to the side of my head. I need to, we need to talk about this. Is this working for Jennifer or not? It helped having someone else. I think I probably would have just kept going with that pattern. It could have had damage to our relationship.
Yeah. So one of the things that I talk about, or, you know, I share, is how our definition of success tends to change as our career progresses and as life changes around us. So when you think about your career and the different shifts that you've had, can we talk about how that definition has changed for you, or what that's looked like for you?
Yeah, I think that's a great point. What you're bringing up for me, James, I had a boss for a long time that she didn't like the term work-life balance because she said you'll never achieve a balance. She really liked the term work-life fit. And we talked a lot about how your work-life fit changes in seasons of life. If you have kids or don't have kids, or how old your kids are, it all changes. Out of college and into NASA, I thought I'll be at NASA for a few years and then I'll move on. After being at NASA, learning about the space program each day, it was a very unique place and very unique environment. My goal shifted to, it would be my dream to be the HR director at the Johnson Space Center. And I was in a leadership development program after being at NASA about 12 years or so, and mentioned that goal as part of the program. And the program leaders were like, you know, that's you're thinking too small, that you need to broaden your perspectives. And I'm like, what could be bigger than the HR director at the Johnson Space Center? As I approached that opportunity, I was the deputy to that role. The director was only about 5 years older than I was. I was in that role relatively young in my career. I went and did a rotation as a frontline leader in engineering for 9 months. We talk about the critical role of frontline leaders to culture. I wanted to understand kind of what were some of those challenges that they face and try to walk in their shoes a bit. So that was a fascinating experience. And I was starting to think about different career opportunities. At that point, I started a blog, blogging at outofthisworldleadership.com. Then through a series of events, I became the HR director at the Johnson Space Center, held that position about 3 years, and then NASA changed its whole model with HR and said, rather than having a decentralized HR function, we're going to manage as a function. And that's when I became the director of HR services and ultimately the deputy chief human capital officer. But I look back on some of those conversations, some of how careers have career shifts. You talk about too the, you know, what was my work-life fit throughout that?
Yeah.
Each position I took, whether I was a frontline supervisor, the deputy HR director, the HR director, family was an important part of my life. And like you say, wanting to engage in the kids' sports activities or the kids' activities. And so probably if you looked at the hours that I put in, they were fewer than my predecessors in just about every role. You know, I was able to manage things, and I had the support of leadership above. I was able to manage things in a different way. And I always tell leaders, it will take as much as you're willing to give it. So you've got to set your boundaries and communicate and hold to those, or the workplace or wherever you are is just going to take more and more.
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly. When we talk about work-life balance, there's this thought of scales and equilibrium. We all know that's not the case.
Yeah.
That's not real. The way that I've always looked at it, right? Well, you know what? I can't say that I've always looked at it this way, but the way that I look at it now is from the perspective of dynamic balance. The best description is when you're riding a bike, pedaling towards your goal, the terrain is changing and you're making these small micro adjustments so that you can be balanced, but moving forward. And there are times when you have to lean into family or you have to lean into work, but you have the ability to make that pivot and continue to pedal to move forward.
That's a great visual, James.
But one of the other things that you mentioned is that you started writing a blog, Out of This World Leadership. Let's talk about that a little bit.
Yeah. So it was back when I was deputy HR director. It was unclear if I would reach the goal of becoming the HR director. I was reading some things that said, if you're an HR professional, you should have a blog. We've talked about my passion for leadership. I love reading leadership books, and I had a bunch of summaries and notes from those, but naturally became easy to get started on the blog. I was thinking about my personal brand and certainly the NASA connection, but also Christian leadership is important to me as well. And Out of This World Leadership brought the two together. I was able to also here just in February, a couple of months ago, published my first book, and it's entitled Out of This World Leadership, Living the Fruit of the Spirit to Lead Well. It takes 10 leadership tips I gave to NASA leaders over the years and connects those to Fruit of the Spirit from Galatians 5. And so that was a lot of fun to put out there.
I would love to schedule a time to have that conversation about the book. Great. I think that would be cool because I feel led at this intersection of business and faith, mm-hmm. being able to live out faith in everyday life, including run my business and how I provide insight to my clients. And so that topic is very near and dear to me. What's the best way for folks to get the book?
Amazon and Barnes & Noble are probably the quickest, easiest ways to grab it.
Okay. You've talked about the Out of This World Leadership book. Did you mention another book you're working on? What else you got?
Yeah, the first book is aligned on the Christian leadership side. I've got another concept I'm working on. It's Building Culture the NASA Way. It's not rocket science. So this will be more of a book primarily to leaders and organizations or other HR professionals that are working on building culture. There are things we did at NASA that worked well. I'm actually living that and proving that in a very different organization here in Space Center Houston. Again, moving from 18,000 employees at NASA to 200 to 400 here at Space Center Houston. And the techniques work. I have talked for years to different HR audiences about things you can do to build culture. And then now I'm able to live it and improve it. I'll write about some of those successes in the next book that probably will come out in 2026.
Brady, I've really enjoyed our conversation. If someone's listening to this and they want to reach out to you, follow up with you, what's the best way for them to do that?
I think LinkedIn is the best opportunity. The other way, if you go to outofthisworldleadership.com, I do have my contact information there as well. Send me an email or contact me through that.
So what we'll do is we will provide a link to your LinkedIn profile as mm-hmm. well as to your website in the show notes of this episode. That way people will know how to contact you.
Perfect.
All right. So Brady, now we're going to reach the part of the episode where we're going to change roles. So you become the interviewer and ask me any question that comes to mind.
Tell me how you got started on this podcast journey.
I got started on the podcast journey because one of my good friends and now business partner in another venture that we do, she came to me and said, how would you like to have your own radio show? We're putting together this online radio program. We're going to be on live shows and we think you'd be a good fit. So I started to become a radio host on the International Business Growth Radio Network. If you can find any of those old episodes, I sucked. It was bad. And the key lesson I take from that is that, you know, for a long time, I didn't want to listen to my past episodes because I knew that they sucked. But in order for me to find my voice, I had to listen to my voice, if that makes any sense. I had to listen to where I was, what I was doing, how was I talking, how was the equipment, breath, all of those things come natural to me now. it's because there's been a lot of practice and intentionality behind that. So it all started back in like 2019 with being a radio show host for the International Business Growth Radio Network. I had a life coaching company, Better You For You. And then I did Better You For You, an entrepreneur's journey, where I talked about my journey as an entrepreneur. And so it was really cool. It was a really good experience for me. And then I stopped that and I was like, you know, I like recording. I like doing the show, but I want to do a podcast. In a few years, I'm going to do consulting, some other stuff. So I started thinking about how could I build my personal brand for the life that I wanted. We talked about how as life changes, our definition of success, or at least the picture that we have for ourselves about what success looks like, changes. So my oldest, he's about to go to college now. My youngest is in the 10th grade, you know, a rising kind of junior. And so we're a few years of being quasi empty nesters. And so even back then, I was thinking, how do I want life to look when we get to that point? I started looking at what I wanted to do. Said, okay, I do want to do a podcast, but I don't know exactly the fit. One of my cousins, you know, we were talking and she was like, well, you're a coach, you know, you got life coaching, business coaching, and you're an engineer. Why don't you focus on helping engineers? And I was like, yes, I want to help engineers achieve success. We're going to do Engineer Your Success, the Engineer Your Success podcast, where we help technical professionals design and live a life where they can win at work and at home. And it was like, boom, was it. So that's the story behind the start of the podcast.
That is awesome.
Are there any final takeaways or reflections you would like to share with the listening audience?
I know a good chunk of your audience are engineers, and there's a lot of talk about the influence of artificial intelligence and AI. And I guess it's my perspective, my position, that people who can build connections with people and who can relate to people are going to be even more successful in the future, because as our students and as our educational infrastructure continues to grapple with AI, grapple with technology, grapple with virtual, those who can make those personal connections are going to succeed as leaders. So people who are interested in leadership roles, focus on the human skills, relationship skills, and being people-centric. I think that will guarantee success in the future.
Okay. Thank you. I'm going to end this episode like I end every episode, and that's this. Many people know what to do. Fewer people know how to do it. And there's a select group of people that follow through and do it, and they are living the life of their dreams. They're designing and living a life where they can win at work and at home. Brady, I want to thank you for being part of that select few.
Thank you, James. It's been a pleasure.